Do you love games? Well, we sure do. Welcome to The Side Scrollers, your home for all things video games, with your host, the random dude, Josh and Freya. Welcome, everybody, for a fantastic episode of The Side Scrollers. I am your host, the random dude, Josh, and with me is, this is a special episode, and I am super excited for this. Freya, unfortunately, is not with us today. However, we do have the oh-so-awesome and the most epic butt-kicking competitor I've ever had in Halo, the one and only Freddy Nero. Freddy, how are you doing, my friend?
I am doing fantastic. That's a lot of high praise right there.
Well, considering how our last game of Halo went, you deserve it. So, and with us today is, we have a very special guest with us from CSE Games, Fabio Del Rio. Fabio, how are you?
I'm doing great, guys. Thanks for having me. How about you guys?
Oh, we are super excited. I mean, I am.
Oh, I'm definitely excited too.
Happy to hear it.
Awesome. Well, you know, let's jump right into it. You know I had a chance to look through CSE Games, what you guys have, but it's always fun to hear it from the man himself. So tell us a little bit about CSE Games. How long have you guys been around? What makes you guys fantastic?
Well, yeah, we started our company way back in 2004, and every time I say it, it shocks me a little bit more that time has flown by that quickly. But yeah, we got started from the sports side of things. My previous background was I worked for a sports collectibles magazine, and after that worked for one of the NHL hockey card manufacturers. And it was right around the time of the poker boom and actually the first the work stoppage around 2004 of the NHL.
That wasn't
a good time. That was unnecessary.
It was. I'm a huge hockey fan, and that was just a sad year.
Yeah, and it totally took everyone by surprise. I mean, there was the one in 94, right after the Rangers win the cup of all things. Mm-hmm. And I remember the NHL was on the cover of Sports Illustrated saying that they're bigger than the NBA. And what happens next is they have a work stoppage. So, but yeah, for us, that was, it was actually a little bit of a sign. So after working with so I was at the NHL trading card manufacturer, and because of the work stoppage, there was kind of a shuffling of the rights for trading cards. And anyway, it was kind of a big sign to start a business. We so it was myself, my brother, and another partner that had this idea to do a playing card based hockey game. And anyway, over the course of a year, we developed kind of a bit of a system to develop games, sports-related games that used classic playing card elements that people are familiar with. And so roughly a year later, we were able to release a couple of products. One was called NHL Icebreaker, and the second one was called Card Football. And so the idea was basically, you know, you manage your cards to decide on your play. You battle against your opponent. Whoever has the strongest hand wins the play, or in the case of football, would win the down. Mm-hmm. And basically, we created these kind of light sport simulations. And that's kind of what got us started. We had, more success than we expected, especially being that the game market was new to us, but we had a good background with, you know, sports distribution and sports products and merchandise. But we were happy with the response on the hobby gaming side. Mm-hmm. And that led us to kind of expand our line to games that are beyond sports. You know, we everyone in this business has a path of some kind, and ours is a unique one, you know, coming from that sports angle. And as the years have gone on, we've added several new products to our line, some of them sports, some of them not. And yeah, it's been a lot of fun. We've got had a chance to meet a lot of game designers with great concepts that we work alongside whenever we do a new game. And yeah, and to this point, yeah, I guess we've got roughly 12, 15 games in our stable right now.
Okay. Yeah, I was looking through, you know, prior to us talking, looking through all the games, and I never actually considered having hockey as a card game. And as I was looking through it, I was like, oh my, wow, I can play that.
No, it does work really well. It's amazing. That's the game we've had in print for 10 years now. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you know, we built it around the idea of, you know, just managing a hand of cards. And, you know, to teach the game is very simple, but there's fun decisions that need to be made. You know, what happens when, you know, you have your opponent coming down the ice and they take it all the way into your shooting zone? Did you save a card strong enough to make the save, or did you burn them all trying to, you know, pick off the pass and trying to go the other direction? So we like to call it a light simulation. And that has partly to do with kind of the game design. You guys may be familiar with games in the past like Stratomatic and APBA. These were very heavy chart-based dice rolling sports games that were very, very accurate in terms of how the outcomes and how the statistics rolled out at the end of the game, but they would take a long time to play. And, you know, it didn't necessarily have the feel or the flow of the sport. While with our hockey game, we focused on getting the feel of hockey, having it kind of a quick play type of game. And, you know, to get that feel, you know, you throw out things like icing and offsides.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's kind of the fun part about sports, designing games around sports, is you have this elaborate rule set that you have to play within, but you also want to try to find the fun, the key moments of a sport, key moments of a game. And those are kind of the decisions you have to make. So it lends itself to quite a fun experience in just 30 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's something that, you know, having played, you know, various games on various platforms, whether it's board, card, PC, console, it's the same sort of logic or mentality. You have all of these rules, but it's finding those fun moments within that rule set. So
totally, yep.
Now, from what I understand, I guess you guys have a Kickstarter campaign that you just launched.
Yes, we do. It's for a game called Gridstone's Night Sky. So this is one of our really nice non-sports games, as the title can tell you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a really cool game. It's the 10th anniversary of the original Gridstone's game. And basically what we've done is we've added a really fun theme of constellations and astronomy to the game. So it's what's described as an abstract strategy game. So think of the classic Chinese game Go with the white and black stones. Mm-hmm. The game that they play in A Beautiful Mind outside in the park. So it's a lighter version of that, not as complicated, scoring less complicated, but the idea is each player is dealt out cards that have patterns on them in a 3x3 grid. The board that you're playing on for a two-player game, for instance, is a 4x4 grid. And on your turn, you place or remove a stone from the board, and your objective is to try to make a match with one of the cards in your hand. So that's the game right there. That's basically all the rules, but you don't know what your opponent has. You can play up to, it goes 2 to 6 players, so the board itself actually expands with the number of players, but you don't know what your opponent has. They don't know what you have, so it's very much a game that, you know, if you're just two light gamers that, you know, casual, that like casual games, you place the stone, make a match, and it's a lot of fun. But if you're two more serious game players, then you start to pick up on patterns of your opponent and, you know, okay, why do they keep placing that stone there? Well, I got to do something to kind of disrupt what he's doing. And it has a really nice way of being light for those who just want to have a nice, light, casual game, or it can turn into a more strategic game depending on who's playing. And anyway, we're really excited about it. We've had a ton of great reviews. And we're adding, you know, some fun components as well, some special power cards that allow you to do different things. As I mentioned, on your turn, on your regular turn in Grid Stones, you can either place or remove a stone. Some of the special abilities that were included are you can move a stone to an adjacent space, or you can complete a card where one of the stones is not in the proper position, that sort of thing, to add a little bit of extra control, extra strategy. So yeah, we're really excited about it. And again, the whole theme of it is as if you're looking at stars in the sky. You know, you have your hand of cards that represent a constellation, and each of the constellation cards are really what you're looking for on the board, and the board represents the sky. So it's like you're looking for the constellations in the sky, and we find that the game itself and this great theme kind of really fit each other nicely. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's a nice game in terms of its subtleties, but also a lot of fun, and it plays very quickly. You can play a full game in 20 to 30 minutes.
Okay. You know, that was one thing I noticed when I was looking at your Kickstarter page was that versatility. Like most traditional games, like a Monopoly, there's no casual Monopoly game.
casual Monopoly do not end in the same sentence ever.
Yeah, exactly. And then you can't get too complicated with just, you know, playing on checkers. But this one, I was like, I could really see just playing this with like my nieces or nephews, or like going head to head with, you know, my chess player friends and really like being jerks to each other. Like, it's a nice balance between the two. So
it is. Yeah. It's one of the real nice, unique aspects of the game. Just as you illustrated, it can be a nice, light, casual games that you can play with kids. You can play with your whole family, or someone that you're more strategic and, you know, competitive with, and you can have equally the same amount of fun. And I think that's what's really unique. And I think is kind of a sign of a nice abstract strategy game. That's this style, like chess. Like you mentioned, chess is one of the classic examples of an abstract strategy game. I think we've captured that pretty well. And, you know, just the fact that you can learn the game in literally 30 seconds, but it doesn't mean that the game's easy at all. There's still a really good challenge of matching patterns and, you know, trying to play similar cards at a time, and I mean, there's lots of different processing that you can do. It kind of touches those spots in your head that, you know, some games can be too thinky, but I think this one is just enough. You can't get away with just not paying attention and expect to win. It's a game you have to follow what your opponent's doing and do a fair bit of planning to get your cards kind of aligned to win the game at the end.
The one thing that really stood out, and I definitely appreciate what Freddie had said, you know, this is a game that you can play with his, you know, nieces and nephews. This is also a type of game I can see a lot of teachers using in the classroom, especially as you're starting to introduce astronomy and constellations and helping students be able to look at and kind of picture how this looks, because you can look up at the sky and look at these constellations and say, I don't get it. I'm not seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
But if you use this to kind of introduce that, and then it opens up their minds to more, it's another sort of avenue for this game.
Yeah, I think you're right. And one of the keys to having games that are educational is they can't seem educational at all.
Yeah.
Or else the kids won't be interested. So you're right. It would subtly introduce them to, you know, great skills like, you know, pattern matching and, you know, visual spatial learning and lots of great, you know, mathematical and cognitive type stuff. But yeah, the whole astronomy side, the whole astrology side, you know, mm-hmm. learning a little bit what was the history of Aquarius and what does the symbol represent and where is it in the sky and you know what makes up the stars in that part of the galaxy and a little thing I discovered in this process is the sign Ursa Major is one of the most famous because it's part of the Big Dipper. Mm-hmm. And that's why, you know, it's obviously that's the one people kind of learn first based on, you know, kind of its prominence in the sky, as well as it's, you know, just one of those funny terms that seems to stick with you in elementary school. Little things like that. And there's and as part of the rule book itself, we're actually going to have a little bit of a write-up and a history on each of the constellations, and because there's great stories behind them, and that was a really nice, you know, fitting of these worlds, the constellations and how the game plays. We just felt that there was this kind of organic magic that started to build, and getting to learn a little bit of the history of the stars and the constellations, I think is will be an extra added touch that we're adding to the game.
Nice. And that's definitely something that when I saw this game, I'm surprised that I caught the educational aspect, because I'm sure that's not the direction you had intended with it.
Not specifically, no. The intent, it is a game that was intended for the family. So a game that's simple to learn, that everyone can sit down and play. As I mentioned, it's diverse. It can be played by anyone. But, it's definitely a great added bonus, an added feature of the game that, you know, you can teach your kids these skills. You can... it's great family time. And I mentioned from the beginning, you know, products that do well on the shelf that have educational value, you don't want it to be overtly educational, because mm-hmm. there will be a resistance with kids to try something that, what do you mean? We're going back to school. You know, we're at home, it's nighttime. I don't want to do school stuff.
Yeah.
But if it's just fun, if it's just interesting, then that's much better. And the other thing too is the designer of the game, his name's Tim W.K. Brown. The W.K. is because there are apparently several other designers with the name Tim Brown in the gaming community. So he has to throw in the W.K. But, he has a young family, and, you know, the games that he designs, he wants to be able to play with them all together. So it was definitely an emphasis to be a family-friendly game, but something that he could also play with his designer and gaming friends.
Yeah.
So, there was an intent to it, but as you say, not a overtly educational type game. Happens to be educational, offers some good stuff, but the intent is, you know, family-friendly, but can be enjoyed by anybody.
Okay. Now, you said that this is the 10th anniversary of Gridstones, correct?
Yes.
Okay, so what's kind of the history behind the game? Like, how did this concept come up?
So originally it was a so Tim Brown designed the game as a straight abstract. So with no theme to it, it was basically just the deck of cards with the pattern and the stones, and the rules haven't really changed very much over the years. And the story behind it is actually pretty interesting. I got to meet Tim many years ago, I guess it would have been 2006 or 2007. He happened to be at a trade show with a friend of his who owns a gaming shop. And this was an event that it was an event for a lot of collectible type items. And in the gaming shop, they sold comics, they sold collectible figures, all kinds of different stuff. So he just happened to be tagging along because he just wanted to check out the show. And he came by our booth because we had our NHL game, and we were one of the few booths that had any gaming related items. And so we got to talking, and he asked me, he said, I dabble in games. I have quite a few prototypes. How do I get into the business? And my recommendation to him was, we're based in Canada, just outside of Toronto. And I mentioned to him, put together a nice prototype and you can get an inexpensive table at the upcoming Canadian Toy Fair, and, give yourself the weekend. Take the weekend off and see what happens, get people to come by your table and your booth and, see what they have to say. And basically by the second day of the show, he got an offer from one of the toy companies, a company out of Montreal. And he rushed over to our booth at the Canadian Toy Fair, said, I got an offer. I don't know what to ask for. I don't know what to do. So we just walked him through it, said, there's a few things you want to keep in mind. The price point, you want a small advance just to make sure that they're serious about the product, get a release date, the term of your deal. You can expect, this amount in terms of royalties, typically between 5% and 10%, usually for a new product is closer to 5%. We just helped him through it, just a few things to keep in mind. And as he got the offer, we helped him out a little bit. And anyway, so a year later, it got into stores, and it was mainly a Canadian release, a product that, was pretty nicely distributed across Canada. And a few years later, we actually published another one of Tim's games, a game called Cortex, which is a tile laying game where you complete shapes and earn tokens. And so when we published Cortex, Tim had gotten the rights back to the original Gridstones game. And so we started to make plans for this next edition. I guess this would have been several years later. Mm-hmm. And being that we liked Cortex, did quite well for us. We were able to license it overseas as well. So we thought, we really like Gridstones. Let's, for the next version, let's ramp it up. Let's, add some fun stuff to it. Give it a nice new theme, new design, and give it another shot. And the funny thing is how the game is about constellations and, astronomy, astrology. Tim and I actually have the exact same birth date. Oh, wow. We're both born on June 29th, 1 year apart. Yeah. So, I mean, it truly, the stars aligned for us to get together to make this game.
No pun intended.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a really cool story, just because so many people in different industries are like cutthroat jerks. So it's nice that just some guy, you're just like, we'll help you out. And then I got an offer. What do I do? Cause that would be my next thing. If I just randomly wanted to make something, that I didn't know anything about, but that's really cool. You guys could help him out. And, obviously it led to, good business for you later on too. So,
It did. It was in, that's the great part about this business is a lot of designers, a lot of publishers are eager to help. And I think it's kind of a built-in nature of the business where before you produce a product and get it out on the shelves. You have to playtest the heck out of it. Mm-hmm. And the fun part is about playtesting, it's usually quite a fun experience. And you get to know people, get to play games with them. They offer feedback. Maybe you go back to them again for more feedback. And basically you become friends around a fun experience. And this, you know, this type of, I don't want to say behavior, but these type of favors are very common in this industry, which is really, really cool. And, you know, for myself, we were coming from the sports end of things where it wasn't necessarily so friendly, but it was, well, I don't know, I guess maybe it was the Canadian in me that was coming out that, you know, instinctually wanted to help Tim out. But, yeah, it's funny how, you know, what goes around comes around. And, mm-hmm. you know, we weren't expecting anything out of it. And it was just nice to meet him, to help him out. And yeah, now we're doing our second project with him.
That's awesome. So are there, so right now, obviously, the Kickstarter, just looking at it, you've got about 15 days to go. You guys are almost fully funded.
We are, yeah. We're basically 90% of the way there. We figure hopefully by the end of the week we'll have it funded and we'll get to some of those nice stretch goals. Mm-hmm. Some of the goals we have built in are improving quality of card stock, adding a few of those special bonus cards I mentioned previously, mm-hmm. Plus a bunch of other nice stuff that as we keep going, we'll release them as we go. So that's kind of the fun part of Kickstarter, even though it is described as 30 days of hell, which it is. but the experience of it is very interesting in that, you know, you get people in on your project early on, and it's really neat to see people get excited and leave comments about certain things, you know, even if it's just as far as cheerleading, like, hey, we're 3/4 of the way there, that's great, blah, blah, blah. But then offering ideas. Mm-hmm. Have you guys thought about this? Sometimes we'll during the campaign, you know, in you have a design change and you send it out to your backers. Hey, guys, what do you think about this? So it's really, really good to getting that feedback about people that really care about board games and are excited to be part of the process from the beginning. And one added bonus to working on Kickstarter.
Yeah. And I'm looking at the Kickstarter, and you guys actually took a very unique approach. You know, with me being on our indie comics podcast, Flipside Focus, you know, we're always spotlighting Kickstarter projects. So cool. I spend a lot of time in Kickstarter, probably about as much time in Kickstarter as I do on Facebook.
nice.
And
that's where all your money goes, right?
I wish.
Yeah.
But you guys started something very unique in that you also have social stretch goals, which, being the social media director for the Undercover Capes podcast network, I was like, what?
I thought that
very different.
Yeah, we had learned about those ideas. It came as a big aha moment from one of our earlier Kickstarters. This is the third one we've done, and we loved it. I mean, it the idea really hit home because as anyone who does social media, it's a challenge to get real followers and real likes on Facebook. You know, there's plenty of accounts out there that have 100,000 followers, but for whatever reason, they only get like one like and one retweet on all their tweets. So
yeah, that's exactly.
Kind of an indication that they don't have a true audience. You know, we've got about 2,300 people on our Twitter account, but we feel that it's a real audience. And partly because in our first Kickstarter, we sent people out to like us on Twitter. And, you know, we noticed throughout the campaign, we probably picked up about 500 followers when we had, you know, we probably had 1,300 going into it, which was great. And that, you know, that was a nice campaign for us. But so we took that and we're, you know, now we're starting to send people to Tim Brown's Twitter account to pump up his numbers, send people to our Facebook page to get likes on that page so they can constantly keep up to date on the product. And that's, you know, and that's a way to have people stay with you as you go. You know, if people see the page, see the product, and even if they don't necessarily back it, you know, they can, if they follow us on Facebook, then they can follow along forever if they want. And we, and it was just such a, such an aha moment to, you know, I mean, it's such a challenge, you know, to get more likes on Facebook. The best way to do it is run Facebook ads, or, you know, you're at a trade show, have a little, you know, giveaway pointing people to your Facebook page. But then again, you don't know if they actually are going to go ahead and do it. So we thought, yeah, these social stretch goals are a fun way to go. And in fact, we just hit our first one. I'm literally in the midst of preparing our next update. We got 250 likes on our Facebook page. On the Gridstones Facebook page. Yeah, and the funny part is before the campaign started, I think we only had 50. So it, yeah, so it's been a nice push. And so it's great too. It, you know, again, having these extra goals kind of build momentum with the campaign a little bit. And, you know, and it's just a reminder in case those backers hadn't already liked the page that they can go check it out. And yeah, I think it's a great way to go. And, you know, social stretch goals are something that we'll continue to do. It's just, you know, a nice way to build your audience, and a real way to build your audience, which we think is really valuable.
Absolutely. Like I'm looking at the stretch goal, you know, 250 Twitter followers for Tim Brown.
Yeah.
And on the Kickstarter page, it currently says he's at 179. Well, when I clicked follow on his, he's now up to 184. Including
Whoa!
Myself. Yeah.
Well, I need to update it then.
Yep.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
So
that's good. And you know what? That's a little something also to offer to Tim, right? It's kind of a, hey, we're going to be building this audience. This is your game. People want to hear things and see your posts. We'll try to send people your way. And he was excited about that. And he always kind of, you know, send me an update like, hey, got a hundred. Well, I guess he didn't update me currently, but he said, hey, I got 175 followers now. Hey, I got this. Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, we figured it's a nice, easy thing to do and can be really valuable in the future.
Yeah. And it enhances the game, because I see, you know, 40 retweets of the particular tweet that you have on there. You guys will add the French rules to it. 50 hearts on the board game page, then you get Spanish and German rules. So you guys are taking this game and truly making it international for anyone of any language, any dialect, anywhere.
And exactly.
Making it a universal game, no pun intended.
Yeah, and that's what we're trying to do. You know, games that have this, you know, kind of universal appeal, if you can keep it as, you know, non-language dependent as possible, it opens up doors into other countries. And us being from Canada, you know, French is obviously very important to include in your games. I mean, you can sell games that are English only, but the Quebec and French Canadian market is very strong for board games. It's almost like a little Europe in that way. So, you know, French is very important, but yeah, the other key languages in the board gaming world, Germany is the home of board games. In fact, there's an award called the Spiel des Jahres, which is basically the German game of the year, is the important award in all of the industry. And it's specifically referred to as the German game of the year. It has to be distributed in Germany. It doesn't have to be conceived in Germany, but it has to be available for sale in Germany before it even qualifies. So yeah, their lifestyle with tabletop games is completely different. They say the average family will spend 20 hours a week playing tabletop games.
Whoa.
And you think about that, that's basically our TV time, right? Like,
yeah,
most of our TV time for the week.
That's crazy.
It's crazy, yeah. But that's what they love to do. And there's a huge event in Essen, Germany every year, which takes place mid-late October. And it's a massive event. Tons of people, families, and they sit and play and learn games and buy games. And I believe the average family will spend around 600 euros on new games at this event. So it's, wow. Yeah, it's a real big part of their lifestyle. And like I said, making a game that's not dependent on language is, you know, is great in that it gives additional opportunities to have the product into even more countries.
That's fantastic. I had no idea it was that big over there. Now, I want to ask you something, because I see this is like your guys' third Kickstarter. How have you found it's so successful on Kickstarter? Because I've seen a bunch of people with Kickstarters, but they didn't fund them. So what's your guys' secret?
Well, it's a lot of work. Every day you gotta think, okay, what can we do today that's a little different, that we can reach out to someone else, but, you know, you can't just post on your Facebook page every second day, because then people get sick of you. So we tried to plan out as many unique things as possible, like talking to you guys. You know, we figured this would be a good fit, a good audience that, first of all, understands Kickstarter, because there are certain segments that completely don't get this at all.
Sure.
On Twitter and on Facebook, you guys are probably familiar with mom blogs and how powerful they can be and how many followers they get. But that is not an avenue to go for Kickstarter campaigns. If you have a product on Amazon, that's great. You talk to those moms, because they can get on Amazon. But Kickstarter, it doesn't jive with them so much. So it, first of all, is trying to find, you know, the right audience and do some special things to get in touch with them. So we launched the product at the big show here in Toronto called Fan Expo, which is basically like our Comic-Con, like our New York Comic-Con, but for everything. It takes up both the north and south side of the downtown convention center in Toronto, which is massive. I believe it's holds something like 100,000 attendees every year.
Wow.
And it's comic books, anime, horror, gaming, it's all of it.
Everything pop culture.
Everything pop culture, exactly. So we figured, hey, that's a great spot to launch the event, to get to meet people. They're growing their gaming area, and we thought, well, that's great. You know, gaming is very interesting in that, you know, it's in a lot of ways a quiet sit down type area. And there was a big hall dedicated to that. And people would come by and we'd teach them the game and give them little buttons and postcards and stuff like that. And we, you know, that was kind of, we felt that this is our crowd. Previous to that, we had gone to two other gaming specific shows. One in June is called Origins, which is in Columbus, Ohio. And so we were at the show, we were demonstrating at booths, we had also dedicated gaming tables kind of outside of the show. And again, we were just out there playing the game, teaching it to people. And we did the same with another show called Gen Con in Indianapolis, which is the big gaming show in North America. Mm-hmm. They're in Indianapolis, the Indiana Convention Center, and they sold out every ticket, like even to attend, to be a family.
Wow.
Unless you had bought them weeks before, the tickets weren't available. You could get in, but you couldn't get to any of the halls, the exhibit halls, or I've never heard of that. You know, 10 years ago, Gen Con would be reaching out to people to buy booth space. The concept of selling out all the attendee tickets is absurd. Mm-hmm. And about a week before the show opened, they sold out the last of their Thursday tickets, which are the least valuable of the 4-day weekend.
I have a convention I'm actually working this weekend, starting tomorrow, and I know, I know all about that. Where it's like, okay, Thursday's the slowest day. That's the day as a volunteer I look forward to. But yeah, to have 100,000 people. Now, was Fan Expo, was that, that's a 3-day show, correct?
That one was, it's a, I would say a three and a half day. Yeah, the Thursday is kind of a half day, and it is the lighter of the 4 days for sure. And that typically is the day that we go and walk around the show and have a look at stuff. And it's actually a great event to meet artists as well. We met several artists that we think we may be working with on future projects.
Nice.
Which is really cool. Yeah, it's funny. Anytime we ask an artist for a business card, he's always like, "Why?" Because they probably think, you know, they want to do, I want some commission work, kind of a one off, you know, whatever. And it's like, no, we're looking for artwork for board game covers. Oh, okay, yeah, here, get in touch, whatever. But that side of it's really neat as well. You know, working with artists and kind of having them capture the feel and style of the game that you're going for. And going back to your original question. So, you know, we were kind of laying the groundwork going to these conventions for the Kickstarter event. But then along the way, we had kind of a schedule during the campaign. We had a schedule of, you know, having releasing of reviews. So we, you know, over the course of these years, we've got to meet a lot of reviewers, and, you know, we wanted to kind of have them spread out throughout the campaign. So we have some video reviews, some written, some quotes. So adding that little bit of, you know, new content as the campaign is going on is really good. We have a few other things planned as well. And a couple that we have our fingers crossed that they come through. So it's definitely tough, you know, cause that first week of the campaign is usually pretty strong, that you do quite well during that first week. The second week, it's always the toughest, you know, there's that kind of lull, that overall kind of excitement is, you know, after that weekend, there's almost that sleepiness the first, second week. So you want to try to, you know, get some other things going to prevent from that lull. The third week is very similar. And then the last week is usually another hot week leading up to the last 2 days. As you guys probably know, you know, people that hit that notify me button, they'll get an email 48 hours before the campaign's over. And that'll be kind of the last bump before the end of the campaign. And those last couple days are just, you know, just kind of frantic. And you're just trying to, you know, reach out to those that maybe hadn't seen the campaign or anything like that. So it's challenging. Yeah. But it's fun. It creates good discipline.
I like that. Basically your answer was hard work. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. It's just, you guys, it sounds like every day you guys are trying something, which is good. I mean, yeah, that's one thing I've learned, is that there's no shortcuts, but you just got to grind away. So that's great.
Exactly. And, you know, another key is to support other projects as well. You know, we've probably backed through our company probably close to 60 projects. And
I saw that. You don't see on most places that, like, you know, are looking for funding. You don't really see that too often. So,
you should do it. People remember. You know, if you back a project, and you know, then they'll likely get a notification. If you follow each other on Kickstarter, then they'll get a notification of your project. And really, all you want is people to just have a look, right? It's just, hey, have a look, review it, and, you know, if you don't think it's for yourself, fine. But if you think it's maybe good for someone else, then yes, please share it. And that's one thing I would recommend to, you know, any future Kickstarter listeners of yours, is that, you know, back other projects that you think are interesting. You know, even if it's just for a small amount, you know, you just want to give them, you know, $5-$10, like, hey, you know, go get them. That looks like a really great project. Or, you know, back, you know, one of their levels and actually get a physical product back. You know, it's nice. And, you know, you really you can interact. You get to interact and get all the updates on how the project's going and so on. And then, yeah, likely, you know, you'll get something in return. For example, you know, one project that we backed a little while ago, they saw that we had our project that just launched. And, you know, we've gotten to meet them. They're another board game publisher. And we included their project in our newsletter that went to all of our backers. And, you know, he did the same for us. And we each noticed that, you know, we got a couple of extra backers just from that. And, you know, because the board game category has become, I think it's probably the number one category on Kickstarter now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's, you know, you have campaigns like you guys probably heard about Exploding Kittens a couple years ago that did.
Yeah, really I love that game. Yeah.
Yeah. $8.7 million for, you know, it's a cute Jeez. Little card game, but yeah, $8.7 million. That's insane. There's
that's
been,
a lot of money.
That's a lot of money for a $20 little card game. You know, there's been some other, you know, multi-million-dollar campaigns just in the last couple of years. And, you know, it's you know, and it's great in that it really gives projects a new life. And it goes to show how much, how many talented designers and publishers there are out there. And, you know, some of these games would never see the light of day if it wasn't for Kickstarter, which yeah. is, you know, it's super cool.
Joking Hazard is another game,
yep.
one that I actually have and backed.
Nice.
You know, made by the guys from Cyanide and Happiness, probably one of the most crude and oh. hilarious webcomics I have ever read and love.
Yeah.
You know,
that's kind of, that's a big key to both those projects. The Exploding Kittens was from the webcomic The Oatmeal.
Yeah.
I don't know if you guys are familiar. And that, I mean, yeah. that was a yep. big push. The game designer was a former Xbox employee, and they kind of put their two marketing heads together, and then it just started to snowball. And yeah, I mean, that's a really smart way to go. You build into an existing audience that is familiar with the internet, is familiar with Kickstarter, put together some really fun content that fits with the theme of the comic, and you know, he gets some results like that. Yeah. I'm sure it's not a formula, but these are two nice examples of putting those heads together like that.
Yeah
and the little things of Exploding Kittens is what makes it hilarious, because
yeah,
like the cards itself is, it's just like a game. Like, it's a very simple game.
It's basically card Russian roulette is kind of what it is. You don't want to get the exploding kitten card, really.
Exactly. But then you look at a card and, like, there's a bunch of, there's a kitten holding a bunch of dildos.
Yeah.
And it's like, this is random and hilarious. So, yeah. like, the longer you play it, the more funny it gets. So.
Totally. My favorite card is called Cats Schrodinger.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's got and the cat is on top of the box, kind of peeking in, you know.
Definitely.
Awesome. Now, do you guys have any plans of taking any of your games to the digital market, turning it into like a PC or a console game?
We are. Yeah, we've actually been working on a couple of our games, not so much PC console, but probably more mobile, kind of okay. the app store type of thing.
Gridstones would be a fun one.
Gridstones is actually our most advanced digital game at the moment. We kind of worked actually did it through a local college, believe it or not. There's a college here called Sheridan College, which is known as one of the big technical colleges in Canada. They send kids and, you know, graduates to, you know, places like Disney and a lot of the big game studios, and their reputation is outstanding. And, you know, we got to know the people there and kind of got connected on a couple of projects with the students to build what we call proof of concept for a couple of our games. And so basically now we have working versions of Gridstones plus Cortex, which is the other game we did with Tim Brown. And so now we're trying to figure out a good way to, you know, work with a partner and get it into distribution, because that whole world is completely foreign to us. You know, I like lots of mobile games. I have a bunch of them on my phone and so on. But that's a whole other ball of wax. I mean, you know, we thought our business was competitive. nothing compared to the App Store and mobile games. We definitely, like I said, we've been working on two projects, and the game plays very well. Like you said, Gritstones is a perfect complement, right? You tap to place a stone, you tap to remove a stone, you drag your card across when you have a match, it connects, ta-da, and there you go. And, you know, we built a really good AI, you know, in kind of that easy, medium, hard mode, and it really feels good. It feels like the game should be played. So, that's a project we've been picking at for a couple years now, and I think now that we have the new version of Gridstones, it's kind of a good excuse to revisit it and make more progress on it. But it's like I said, it's a whole different ball of wax. Well, maybe you if you guys have some resources, we can we can share some contacts after the chat.
Yeah, I'll definitely any connections that we have, we'll definitely get you guys in touch. And you know, when the app does go live or prior to it going live, let us know. You know, love to bring you back on the show. We can talk about it and all of that. So
awesome.
The best place for people to obviously back Gridstones Night Sky would be going to Kickstarter.com.
Yeah, but even faster than that, they can just go to gridstones.com, and we have it automatically forward to our Kickstarter page.
Oh, great.
So just gridstones.com, not autocorrect, grindstones.com, which will happen almost every time you write the word gridstones. So, yeah, gridstones.com will forward you right to the Kickstarter campaign. And then our website, if you want to read some more about our products, is csegames.com. That's Charlie Sierra Echo Games.com for those that love the what do you call that out that mnemonic? Anyway, those have done any kind of EMS training or police Soldier, services training. Cop, I forget the term. I don't even know why I brought it up, but so csegames.com, and the same on Twitter and Facebook. We're just Facebook/CSEGames, Twitter/CSEGames.
Awesome. And we'll definitely make sure to put links both to your guys' social media and the Kickstarter campaign, so that way people can just click on that and boom, takes them right there, make it really easy for them. So
awesome. Thanks, guys.
That being said, this has been a lot of fun. Fabio, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. The time absolutely flew by. Yeah, thank you.
Time flies by when you're having fun. So, Freddie, it's always a blast recording with you. I love it. It's a blast.
I know. I'm sad we don't get to do it more often, man.
I know. Well, we've had the time, so we're able to. So
yeah.
Awesome. And for all of you listeners, thank you so much for joining us. Make sure to check us out on undercovercapes.com. I am your host, the Random Dude Josh, and we will catch you guys next time. This has been a production of Undercover Capes Podcast Network. Make sure to check us out on Facebook and Twitter at The Side Scrollers and at undercovercapes.com.